100 or 150 okay. meters in diameter.
Our heading is about averaging about 200, 210. Rock and
roll
ride, isn't it?
The rover is very springy.
Never been on a ride like this before. Oh, boy.
They're really making time. Apparently not too many rocks
to dodge. I'm
glad
they got this great suspension system on this thing.
More craters than anything else. Dave says it's a great suspension system on this thing.
Hey, here's a big one right here on our left, Jim.
Yeah, but it's not. I don't think it's big enough to be Risley.
Yeah, I don't think it is either.
They're going to spot it in the middle.
We got a ridge up here in front of us.
The, what'd I say, Joe, about 1.6, 1.7 for Risling?
It's about 1.4, 1.5, Jim.
Get on top of it.
That could be Risling, Dave. We'll find out when we get up on top of this ridge.
Yeah. Yes, he's coming up over a little hump there that's on our... topographical
structure. By the way, Houston, your comm is crystal clear for us up here.
All of this is being relayed
so
through the rover.
Dave, maybe we ought to take this gear to Flagstaff next time.
Flagstaff, yeah. Arizona.
Off in the west, like the Bennett Ridge.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it all the way.
That's a hill across the canyon.
You can see just the peak of it all the time.
And Rover, this is Houston. Your range to Risling is about 1.7, so you may be short of that still.
Hey, just click off 1.7 and our relative bearing 036.
There's the rail.
There's the rail.
They can see down in the rail now.
We're looking down down and across the rail. We can see craters on the far side of the rail.
That's Jim Irwin.
Roger, like advertised.
The rover's really moving out.
Turn the camera off.
Yeah.
This is smooth, modern area.
Yeah, we're getting into blocky stuff. About 1 foot,
right,
quite now. Angular, irregular surface.
We're right at the edge of the rail, I think.
Yes, sir.
Dave.
We're on the edge of the rail. You better believe it. I think we're heading right.
I don't see elbow, though.
Well,
oh, yeah, I see elbow. Hey, we have to stay up on the high part of the rail here.
Yeah.
And see, elbow is not as prominent as we thought, but there's a definite crater there. I see elbow.
He sees the...
Yeah, it's subtle, though.
I'm going to turn on the camera.
Hey,
look, there's
crater.
A big block on the edge of the rail there that must be 10 meters. There are lots of outcrops. But on the far side, I don't see anything that would suggest really layering. There's a lot of debris, big angular blocks all the way down, but nothing that you'd really call... exact layers.
Roger, we copy.
They passed the Risling crater.
Onto
the rail.
Yeah, I think that the heading was, we were on the heading, it was a little too far west.
They didn't see Risling.
We're getting back up on the higher part of the real rim. At this part, I'd estimate the slope is probably, about 3 degrees.
Yeah, there's a definite ridge or rim that runs along the rail. Maybe 70, 80 meters from the inflection point that drops down into the rail, don't you think, Jim?
Yeah. And we might as well, we're heading right toward, we'll head toward the east side there of Elbow.
Yeah, we're in good shape. We can see Elbow, and we can see the front all the way down to the spur, and there's not a big block on it.
They're going on down the edge of the rail, still driving the rover, just driving down
talking,
the side of the
keep
canyon.
Talking. Beautiful description.
Hang on.
I see one large block up about a quarter of the way up the front, Dave.
Okay, hang on there.
Yeah.
There's a big one partially buried. Oh, there's some beautiful geology out here.
About a 3 degree slope.
Spectacular.
Into the rill, and they're going down that edge to the south.
Oop, watch
just
that.
Running
hold on.
Along the edge of the rill. Dave Scott and Jim Irwin, and you hear very clear comments from them as they're
looking up at the,
barreling along
at the front
river.
Now, Joe, I sure see the linear patterns that Dave commented on before with the dip and everything. Boy, that was a good stroke.
The front is the mountain escarpment.
Right.
The front is the mountain escarpment.
I sure get the impression that almost looks like a slump feature, but we'll take some good pictures of that. because you see the same linear type pattern in the east side of the rill. And those, the linear pattern there is parallel, almost like layering in the rill.
They've gone past the crater called Canyon.
Look up slope, up the front, that layering takes that dip to the northeast that Dave had mentioned earlier.
Roger, Jim, and can you actually see the east side of the rill towards the south there?
Oh, yeah, I can see, looking directly south, I can see that that exposure, the exposure that faces northwest. I can look down and I can see, I think I can see Hadley Sea down there.
Remarkable.
Yeah, I think I can see the south rim of Hadley Sea.
This is one of the many Hadley craters, ABC. This is a large one off to the southwest of their present movement.
Okay, let's see. Well, we can see Elbow.
Elbow
anyway,
is a crater.
But anyway, when we get there, hang on, got one coming. Okay.
Good, look out, we're going to bounce. Got a crater coming.
All right.
Boom.
Should be 2.7, so we've got another 0.7 to go.
2.7
okay.
Nautical miles from
right.
The limb.
It's been generally about 10 clicks.
Yeah, but takes a tension fan.
Makes about 10 kilometers per hour, Dave Scott says. This
yeah,
broadcast coming to you from the Voice of America, bringing you a worldwide description of Dave Scott and Jim Irwin on the surface of the moon as they're moving out to the south in the lunar rover, making about 10 kilometers per hour down the side of Hadley Rill, the edge of Hadley Rill, moving south toward Elbow Crater and the Apennines.
Into the rill. That's just at the base of St. George.
Roger, Jim, copy.
Elbow Crater, St. George Crater, these were good landmarks.
And they were hitting about 165 right now.
Turning a bit toward the east.
Try to stay on the fairly level and smooth part of the rill rim. But looking over to the edge of the rill at this point, I see a large concentration of large boulders, large rocks, and I'd estimate the size, they're angular, and they're all of the same color and texture as far as I can tell from here. See that, Con? Well, you better watch the road.
No, I see what you're saying there. You keep talking, let me drive.
It's the first good concentration of large rocks that I've seen. Very similar to the large rocks that that 14 saw up at the top of Cone.
Roger, Jim, we copy, and your range should be coming up on 3.1 at station 1.
3.1 nautical miles from the...
Okay, relative, right now, Joe, our bearing is 1.8, range is 2.3.
Going directly south, 2.3 nautical miles from home, from the limb now. That's Jim Irwin describing the rocky boulders on the west side of Hadley Rill. They're moving south down the rim of Hadley
okay,
Rill
on the
Joe,
east
side.
Okay, now, Joe, I can see the bottom of the valley, head valley that leads down toward Hadley Sea. I can see the bottom of the rill. It's very smooth. I see two very large boulders that are right... on the surface there, on the top of the very smooth portion of the bottom of the rill.
Jim Irwin.
And the one to the southeast, I can see the track of where it's rolled down slope.
Jim, looking into the bottom of the rill, to the canyon off to the west of
Roger,
this
Jim,
present
copy.
Spot.
Roger, Jim, copy. And is the bottom V-shaped or fairly flat?
Oh, it's just flat. Well, it's hard to estimate. I'd estimate maybe 200 meters wide of a flat area in the bottom. Oh, and I can see what we thought was Bridge Crater, and it definitely would not have been a place to cross Hadley Rill. It's just a depression in the west wall of the rill, and boy, at this vantage point, there are sure a lot more blocks exposed on the far side of the rill. I'm contrasting now the rail to the southeast.
Hang on, Jim.
Okay. And the rail to the side of the rail to the northwest.
Roger, Jim, copy all that loud and clear. And Dave, is the front wheels, are the front wheels wandering off of straight ahead as you drive along there?
No, they're okay, Joe. It's just, there are a lot of craters and it's just sporty driving. I've just got to keep my eye on the road every second.
Roger, we understand that. Just trying to get some engineering information here. Apparently your front wheels are tracking straight ahead. Is that correct?
That's correct, and of course when we turn, they dig in, and it makes the rear end break out, but it's okay, we handle it.
Dave says
yeah, you could.
And to Jim's comment that the near side of the rear wall is smooth without any outcrops there by St. George, and the far side has got all sorts of debris. Almost looks like we could drive down in on this side, doesn't it?
Stand by on that, Dave.
So we could drive back out.
Stand by on that, Dave.
Yeah, that's an idea from Dave Scott. I don't think it was bought too heartily.
Oh, no. I can turn around and look to the northwest where the real trend's to the north. But I'll let me concentrate on elbow for the moment.
Yeah, let's get to elbow.
Dave Scott says this is sporty driving, the way the Rover is handling.
Hang on.
Going to go through another bounce. Very springy ride on the lunar
rover. The range estimate must have been off for elbow. Our map says 2.7. Joe said 3.2, I guess.
Our estimated, Jim, was 3.1 from your landing site.
They're going.
Oh, that's right. That's the difference, yeah.
They're going by the map for a nominal landing on the target point. Remember, they're about 300 or 400 meters off to the northeast.
Oh, this is really a sporty driving course.
Man,
what a Grand Prix this is.
Dave Scott, oh man, what a Grand Prix this is, he says.
There's old Elbow.
There's Elbow Crater. They can see it out in front of them.
There's a real fresh one down there.
No, Elbow's larger than that.
Yeah, but there's a nice fresh one then.
Yeah, but you want to go a little farther east. See, that's Elbow out at 1130.
Oh, yeah, Raj. Gosh, that's a long way away.
Yeah.
Distances are very deceiving. Like we've been driving for an hour.
We've been driving for 23 minutes now.
Are you sure that's Elbow, Jim?
Yeah. Yeah, you want to go farther east, do you?
Okay. Down this little crater. Back up.
See, that's Elbow out at our 1 o'clock position.
Sure, this is Elbow right here, I believe, my friend.
Yeah, this is Elbow right here.
Yeah,
those large ones.
The one we're just trending into.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big fella, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is. I don't know,
Elbow's some...
Take a look up here and we'll see how she looks.
Maybe you can, angle uphill here.
Yeah, there's... How we doing on time there, Houston?
Like gangbusters, Dave and Jim, continue on and we'll give you the exact number in a minute.
Elbow Crater is
okay,
four.
Do we want to stop at Elbow or press on?
Stop. Follow the checklist, just as planned.
We're going to stop at Elbow Crater. It's
just as planned, okay.
It's about 400 meters wide, so they can't
miss
that.
Let's go up on the ridge line there. I see some debris. Maybe we can get some a fresh one in the rim. Be looking down sun. Oh, look at this baby climb the hill.
Yeah, climbing at about 8 clicks.
Yeah, man.
Climbing a hill at 8 kilometers per hour. When he says
Jim,
clicks, he means kilometers.
Can you get an amp reading for us as you climb?
Yeah, reading, it's 10 on bad one, Joe.
Drawing 10 amperes of power going up the hill at 8 kilometers per hour. Okay, very pleased with the way it climbs.
We've got a good slope here, about, I'd say, 10 degrees we're going up right now.
10 degree hill, 10 degree slope. Dave says, hold on.
Okay, now we're up on the high part, and we're on the east rim of Elbow.
East rim of Elbow Crater.
Okay, Okay, this ought to give the folks back home something to look at right here.
This is where they're going to stop, apparently.
Okay, we're at our first stop.
Station 1, the rim of Elbow Crater.
Okay, now stop.
Stop, turn on the TV, aim the antenna. We ought to see some fantastic pictures here in just a minute, coming back from the...
And Joe, here's some readings for you.
Roger.
185-011-045-032-105-112-085.
These are temperatures and fuels.
087.
Amount of current.
And, I'm reading the lower limit on the motor temps.
Lower limit
forward
on the motor?
And rear.
They're all...
That looks like that gauge is operating.
Running very cool. Or either
maybe
not
they're
operating.
Still cool.
Batteries are 85 and 87 degrees.
I thought so. Okay, Joe, I'll give you a TV here.
They have over 100 ampere hours left in both batteries. They've got 3.2 miles back to the limb on their onboard navigation system. I'm trying to convert some of these things you just heard read out. They're about 185 degrees just west of due south from the limb, down to Elbow Crater. Now...
Okay, Joe, high gain's pointed.
It's pointed to high gain.
And we've got a fair amount of dust on the rover. Very light, thin.
Very light, thin dust on the rover, says Dave Scott. Joe Allen just told the astronauts that they gained 20 minutes on that traverse. It took them some 27 minutes to go from their landing site down to the edge of Elbow Crater.
Hey, Joe, give me a comm check on the FMTV.
Okay, Dave, comm check on FMTV, and it's a 16 millimeter off.
Now the camera is on. The Earth has control of the camera now.
Okay, I've taken a pan.
There
okay.
We go. Now we have communication with the astronauts through the high gain antenna. Some switching going. Camera isn't on completely. It came on for a moment, then went back off.
Calm temporarily here. Stand by.
Joe Allen making that comment. Reconfiguring. Every time you stop, apparently we're going to go through this situation.
You're very broken and garbled. Stand by one. We're working.
All right. Let me summarize briefly for you there.
Okay,
every time the
now,
spacecraft stops and the antenna is switched, then we will have a momentary interruption in communication while antennas are realigned, and then we should have television picture every time. That's Joe Allen in Mission Control. This broadcast from the Voice of America worldwide, a description of Dave Scott and Jim Irwin as they conduct their excursion of the moon. They've reached Station 1 after a 27-minute ride in the lunar rover. They're at Station 1, which is called Elbow Crater. A large indentation, some 400 meters wide, on the edge of Hadley Rill. Let's listen.
Here, Jimmer. Right over here is one. I kicked dust all over him so easy. How about that one right there? I think we'll get that in the bag. Go.
There's Dave Scott looking for a rock here around the edge of this crater. We're having some intermittent communication here from Mission Control. The television camera is now panning back across the navigation section of the rover. I believe they'll stay here at this position about 20 minutes. 15 to 20 minutes. And then they will have another 8-minute journey to Station 2, which is St. George's crater, at which point they will do some more sampling. Possibly not quite 20 minutes, possibly about 10, between 12 and 15 minutes here at Elbow Crater. Looking at the timeline ahead, it depends on how long it takes them to get there. All right, here comes communication again.
Roger, Dave, copy loud and clear. Continue on. And this is Houston with a comm check.
Yeah, that's a lot better, Joe. I thought we lost you there for a minute.
We're hearing every word, loud and clear.
Comm's back now. They're on the edge of the crater.
Okay, I guess it was in your configuration down there. Okay, we'll hop up here and get another one.
Looking for rocks. Astronaut Fred Hayes, who has been with us through most of our EVAs, he is away from us at the moment. I think he's making a broadcast
okay,
with good friends of the British that's Broadcasting Corporation. He'll rejoin us shortly.
You're a little too big.
The television camera
right here, Jimmer,
is now panning around the
surface.
Oh, circuit.
I see a large chunk in there.
Dave Scott getting
a
large
soil
chunk.
On this one, huh? Yeah, man.
Dave Scott getting a rock. Our TV is on. There's a very slow panoramic view of the blocky rocks around on the edge of this crater. The camera is now moving around toward Hadley Rill.
Got it.
We can see Elbow Crater coming into view.
Okay, it's a location shot here. Okay, Joe, these are buried about an inch or so. The one I have
now the canyon is in view.
Subangular. It's covered with dust.
It's almost...
But beneath the dust...
There's Hadley Rill in the TV picture. Dave Scott describing the rock.
It's quite friable. And I see olivine. Look at this, Jim.
He sees a mineral called olivine.
Would you call that olivine? And there's a big lath in there. Look at the big lath, about a centimeter long and a millimeter wide. Pledge. Now, let me put this in your bag.
Plagioclase also.
Gray, millimeter-sized grains with, like, 2-millimeter-sized phenocryst in it.
Gosh. Roger, that's
really
crystal, Dave. We copy you loud and clear. We need a bag number for that.
Millimeter-sized phenocryst also, he says.
Bag number 157.
Roger.
Let me get you another one.
Bag number 157. That's to document the samples as described. The television camera is going around past Hadley Rill. We can get a good view of the edge of it. We can see the shadow of the rover.
That's really buried. Still too big to go in there. Yeah.
Whenever the camera points down sun, then there's nothing but white. It just burns out all detail.
Can I put any soil in there? Yeah, give me a bag. Soil it up too. Dig a little light trench in there and we'll...
Going to dig a little trench to get some of these rocks
that,
out of the surface.
Dr. Schmidt's going to win his bet.
Looks like Dr. Schmidt is going to win
not
his
bet. Not
that
part. Get another part. Where we picked the rocket. Right in front of it.
Referring to Harrison Schmidt, the astronaut geologist, and his predictions on what they would find
the
here.
Spot there. Whew! Oh, four. Okay, you just try it again.
These rocks are buried. They're having to dig them out.
Real smooth, and I'll catch. Okay. Attaboy.
Attaboy, says Dave.
Attaboy. Good show. Okay. That'll be enough for him to take a look at.
Some extremely interesting minerals, according to these two men. They've been trained in geology for hours and hours and hours on what
to look
for.
157.
It must have popped out of the ground and up into the sky. There's no air there.
Get in there. Let me get the picture.
Camera came around close to the sun just then.
Get the picture? Okay, let's hop on out and get one more. Yeah, it's pretty sparse out here. Gosh, we're only very far at all. I'm not sure that the ones out here aren't thrown up from nearby.
Yeah, I don't know that this is representative too much of Elbow.
I don't think so either. But let's pick up one more anyway, since we're out here. I see a little one.
camera looking around to the north. And there is Mount Hadley in the distance.
Got to be careful not to kick the dust all over him when you get there.
These great lunar mountains tower
some 5,000
meters.
Raindrop here, it looks like. Yeah, just behind you is one of those fresh craters, too, with a lot of glass in it. Is it really? Yeah, right behind you. Okay, let's pick up these, get the radio done.
Scott says some of the glass particles look like miniature raindrops. That's evidence of some impacts, great heat.
My yo-yo doesn't cut it out here. My yo-yo's broken. Right, my yo-yo. Got so much dust on my camera, I hardly see the camera settings. Okay, got a bag?
Yeah. Stirring up a lot of dust. This very fine surface soil is quite thick. Some 18 to 20 centimeters thick.
I've got another subangular fragment here, rough surface texture, and knock a little dust off of it, and it looks like a very fine-grained gray, rather solid frag. I don't see any significant pits or any significant-sized crystals in there. It might just be because of the surface covering. But just a smooth, fairly hard rock.
That's Dave Scott.
Roger, Dave.
Copy. I haven't seen any pits on any of these. And most of them are about one-fifth buried. Okay, here's another one that's got, on the underneath side of that. I hope I don't lose these tongs. On the underneath side of this frag, Joe, I can see some soil that is caked on the bottom, about 1 millimeter thick. And maybe down in the place from which I got it, we could sample. Why don't we get it? I'll take a picture and you can scoop that.
Okay, Dave, we copy. Good description. We'd like the bag number from that and like for you to move out at your next opportunity, please.
Okay, 158. The bag sample.
Scoop that?
Yeah, scoop that. I only got one hand now, the broken yo-yo.
Television camera now panning on past the astronauts to other interesting blocky parts of the lunar surface. When the camera pointed very close to the sun, it was quite a dark picture because the astronauts are only illuminated.
Okay, if your yo-yo is working, can you roll the bag up? Yeah. I'm going to have to hold on to these tongs now.
You almost missed the rock he was picking up.
If it's that fragile, I'm wondering about using mine. Maybe you can use mine.
That's right.
I can go better without it, just as well without it. Okay. Put this in your bag.
Yeah.
Got to go back to Rover.
Yeah.
Okay, Joe, you want us to press on up to St. George?
That's affirmed, guys. Move on.
Television camera back on Hadley Rail again.
We're on the way. Oh, boy. This is traveling.
You can see down in the rill on the far side, these blocky boulders on the far side of the rill described by Jim Owen.
The sand pile was never like this. Yeah, man.
The sand pile was never like this.
I wish we could just sit down and play with the rocks for a while. Look at these things. They're shiny, sparkly.
Television panoramic view of the rill.
Gosh.
Moving around to the west and northwest.
Dave, there'll be a lot of them. Let's get back. Can't resist it.
Can't resist the rocks. Do you see so many that are interesting? He wants to pick them up.
George.
He just says, imagine what we'll see when we get to St. George. Can't wait to get to St. George. There goes Hadley Delta, this highest of mountains, stretching up some 5,000 meters above the landing site. And in the distance, more lunar peaks. They landed down over this area.
They might fell out all the way, huh? Yeah. They'll never be able to get it.
Direction. I believe that was Bennett Hill that just went by a moment ago. Hadley Delta is still out of view of the television camera as it pans around toward the south. Bennett Hill,
I'll tell you,
another mountain across the rill.
Want me to attach it for you? Good try. Okay, you need to lean forward some. Up and forward.
They're back at the rover now. They're bouncing the rover. It's quite springy.
Yeah, I'll get the TV.
You can see how it bounces the television, as a matter of fact.
Hey, Joe, going PM1WB.
Roger, Dave.
He's going to click off the television. There it went. Television's just turned off. Now we've got to reconfigure the communications mode while the astronauts get back aboard the rover and prepare for another eight-minute ride to St. George's Crater. This broadcast coming to you from the Voice of America, bringing you worldwide coverage of the first lunar excursion by astronauts Dave Scott and Jim Irwin of Apollo 15 on the surface of the moon. They're at the Hadley Apennine landing site. They have driven the lunar rover for about 3.2 kilometers southwest of their landing site. They're right on the edge of Hadley Rill. They have stopped, made their first stop for geological samples on the edge of what is called Elbow Crater. And now they're going to get on the rover for another eight-minute trip to an area called St. George's Crater, which is up in the actual lunar Apennine Mountains. This should bring some Apennine material. Let's listen. We'll be back momentarily. This is Rhett Turner in Houston. Back to Norman Guerin in Washington.
You're listening to the Voice of America's worldwide coverage of the flight of Apollo 15. We take you to the VOA newsroom and a summary of news.
America's Apollo 15 astronauts, David Scott and James Irwin, have begun a seven-hour exploration of the surface of the moon and are sending television pictures back to Earth. They unpacked and entered a special electrically powered moon car, the Lunar Rover, to become the first men to ride on the moon. The astronauts drove to a deep valley, the Hadley Rill, which is on one side of the lunar landing area. They are taking pictures and picking up rocks that scientists hope will help man learn how the moon was formed. With this information, man will know more about the ancient geological history of the Earth. Scott and Irwin will return to the lunar lander, the Falcon, later today for a rest period. But before they enter the Falcon, they will set up a scientific instrument station that will send information back to Earth after they leave the moon. While Scott and Irwin are exploring the moon, the third astronaut, Alfred Worden, is orbiting the moon in the command ship. He is taking detailed pictures and making scientific studies. Scott and Irwin stepped out of the lunar lander onto the moon more than 2 hours ago. Scott said as he walked on the moon for the first time, "This is exploration at its greatest." When Irwin said he was ready to step out of the Falcon, Scott said, "Why not? It's nice out here." Scott and Irwin landed on the moon about 18 hours ago. Later, Scott opened the door of the Falcon and described what he saw to Mission Control in Houston. He said the rock, craters, and colors of the moon are beautiful and fantastic. Scott and Irwin will make their second and third moon exploration Sunday and Monday. They will spend 67 hours on the moon, the most complete exploration ever made by man. Khartoum. The government of Sudan continues its search for persons who joined in the brief overthrow of President Numeri last week. United Press International says diplomatic mail is being checked and that Sudan is limiting the movement of Soviet and Eastern European newsmen. The Soviet news agency TASS charged that President Numeri's government has begun a campaign of terror against Sudanese communists, and it said there has been violence against Soviet officials and property in Sudan. TASS said Soviet leaders have sent messages to President Numeri asking that he stop those actions and warning that they threaten relations between the Soviet Union and Sudan. Sudan's news agency says Sudan has accused the Soviet Union of an unfair campaign against the Sudanese people. Tripoli. The leaders of five Arab nations strongly condemned what they call Jordan's efforts to crush the Palestine resistance movement, and they warned that if Jordan fails to improve its relations with the guerrillas, other Arab nations might have to act to protect the Palestinians. The statement was made by the leaders of Libya, Egypt, Syria, Yemen, and South Yemen as they ended an emergency meeting in Tripoli. The United Nations. The United States announced plans to give another $1 million to the UN's relief effort for the people of East Pakistan. The United States already has given more than $70 million in aid for East Pakistani refugees in India. In Islamabad, The Pakistani government urged that UN aid for East Pakistan be sent immediately. It said small ships and tugboats are urgently needed to take supplies to the refugees. In India, the government radio said observers will not be permitted on India's side of the border with East Pakistan. The broadcast said observers are needed in East Pakistan. It charged that the Pakistani army is continuing a military campaign against the people of East Pakistan. Nicosia. United Nations officials met with leaders of the Cyprus Turks. The UN officials met yesterday with the president of Cyprus, Archbishop Makarios. The meetings are part of UN efforts to stop increasing tension between Cyprus Greeks and Cyprus Turks. Tokyo. Japan's Prime Minister Sato called a special cabinet meeting for Monday. The cabinet will study demands for an immediate halt to military flights in airspace used by passenger airliners. 162 persons on a Japanese airliner were killed yesterday when the plane crashed with a Japanese fighter plane. The pilot of the military plane parachuted to safety. Airline officials said the airliner was flying by instruments at the correct height. They said the pilot of the military plane was not using instruments to check his height, but was flying by sight. Japanese officials have not yet said whether they will arrest the pilot, who was on a training flight when the crash took place. Hong Kong. A Canadian official reports two communist Chinese officials said President Nixon must make some real compromises during his visit to Peking if it is to have useful results. Canada's opposition Conservative Party leader Robert Stanfield spoke to newsmen following a week's visit to the People's Republic of China. He said the statements were made by China's acting foreign minister, Chi Peng-fei, and Kuo Mo-jo, a member of the Communist Party's Central Committee. Mr. Stanfield reported that the two officials said Mr. Nixon must agree that Taiwan is a province of China. China's premier, Zhou Enlai, also said this to a group of American students visiting Peking. However, he said at the time that his statements were not official policy, because mistakes might be made in the reports of his talks with the students. That's the news, Larry West reporting.
This is the Voice of America's coverage of the flight of Apollo 15, now 122 hours, 33 minutes into the mission. For more on the astronauts' lunar ride along Hadley Ridge, we take you to the Manned Spacecraft Center and correspondent Rhett Turner.
The astronauts are now on the way to St. George's Crater. It's about an 8-minute ride from Station 1 to Station 2, down south south of the landing site. They're some between 3 and 4 kilometers away from the actual touchdown spot. Communication is just a little scratchy at this moment because they're in the rover and this is being relayed through the rover communication system. When they're on the move, Dave Scott just said, hang on. He's really moving out. They may be running into a greater boulder field at this point. Let's listen.
Oh, there's almost a view right into that crater. I stopped short of it. Just stop here.
He almost drove into a crater.
Stop here. I got to go down, son, just a minute. I'm going to back up just a tad.
They're not quite to Station 2 yet.
We're okay as far as we can.
They've been outside some 2 hours and 40
minutes. And, Jim, as you look back, can you see the rover tracks?
Joe Allen asking if you can see the rover tracks.
Yeah, we could, Joe. I saw him when we stopped at the last stop.
Okay, good. Sounds like the old Hansel and Gretel trick will work.
Yeah, man.
Follow the road you came on to get back home.
Okay, through there, Jim. You can get off.
The Hansel and Gretel trick.
Try
and get off. If they lose their way, they can always follow the tracks home.
Then they have an update as soon as Jim gets off.
Roger.
Get an update on the parameters.
You give it. I'll give it to him. Good. Let me go get the TV.
Okay, Joe, you're ready to copy. Here we go. 280-017-055-039-105-110.
I'll interpret this in a moment.
090.
I'll interpret this for you in just a moment here. He's giving us the condition of the rover. How about the temperature of the front motors. He's looking for that now. Low scale?
Having trouble, too. Yeah, man. Moving. And motor temps are both off scale low. Oh, look back there, Jim. Look at that. Isn't that something? We're up on a slope, Joe, and we're looking back down into the valley.
That's beautiful.
That is spectacular.
They're up on a slope looking back down into the rill, probably to the north where the lighting is better.
Get the antenna pointed here.
They've stopped, so he's getting off
Jim,
to point the
antenna.
Okay, Jim,
could you give us a frame count when you finish your pan, and Dave would like one from you.
Yes, sir. The heading he followed.
And if you're still near the rover, we missed the heading and bearing.
Heading was 280 degrees.
Oh, I get you that, Joe. Okay, Dave.
The bearing back home to the limb is 17 degrees, if I copied all of this right just a moment ago. So now...
Okay,
five,
the heading... is 270 and bearing 017.
270 now that they've stopped.
Roger, and if the rover's fairly level, we'll give you a nav update later on.
They're 5.5.
Give them the readings of the rover. Jim, give them the readings on the rover. Okay.
Scott and Irwin have stopped at the St. George Crater area. They say there's a fantastic view there. They're going to get the TV configured here in just a moment.
Reading one to the right.
That's Jim Irwin.
Pitch is zero.
Pitch is zero. This is the they're taking some sun sightings here now.
And roll is 8 degrees right.
Okay, Jim, sounds good.
There's a
FMTV.
Roger.
Now they're going to reconfigure, and we should get that high-gain antenna here in just a moment and have a television picture.
We want to have a great view this time. Okay, Jim, let's go sample this rock.
Can hardly wait.
Dave's really setting us up for the picture.
This is unreal. The most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
Oh, boy, I can't wait. The suspense is killing me here. He says that the picture is just going to knock us out. We just can't wait for this. Part way up the Apennine front area on the rim of St. George Crater, Station 2.
Apparently, they have a very good...
welcome back. Welcome back, Fred
Hayes.
How's the BBC
today?
Very
angular.
Going pretty well. It was a little hard to follow there. I was having to listen two ears at once, which was confusing.
Well, it's got glass on one side of it with lots of bubbles.
More of these glasses.
And they're about a centimeter across, and one corner of it has got all this glass covering on it. Seems like there's a linear fracture through one side. It almost looks like that might be a contact. It is, within the rock. It looks like we have a... maybe a breccia on top of a crystalline rock. It's sort of covered with glass. I can't really tell, but I can see a definite linear feature through one side of it, which is about a fifth. And the glass covers both sides of what I guess I'm calling a contact. And there's also, parallel to that contact, one surface which is quite flat, only for about 8 inches or so. Looks like it's been... chipped off. The boulder itself is on the order of about a meter across and a meter across, and maybe it looks like a half meter thick or so. It's got to fill it up one side, and the other side is in a shadow. You can't really tell whether it doesn't look like it's filled. It's got to fill it on the downslope side, and the upslope side is open and free. As a matter of fact, it looks like it's almost excavated beneath it. It looks fairly recent, doesn't it? Yeah, it sure does. It sure does. And I can see underneath the upslope side, whereas on a downslope side, it's piled up. Boy, that is really something. Hey, let's get some good pictures of that.
before we disturb it too much.
Now we have the television on again. We can see the astronauts as they're moving about. Beautiful view here.
Oh, on you and the boulder on the TV. And it probably is fresh, probably not older than 3.5 billion years.
Can you imagine that, Joe? Here sits this rock, and it's been here since before creatures roamed the sea on orbital Earth.
That's really impressive, Dave. You see something that's so very old there, that's been there.
Well said, Dave. Well said.
We ought to check the dust on the lens on these cameras.
Scott says this rock that he's pointing the camera toward has been there since before creatures swam the seas of the earth. The camera, I believe, is they're trying to zoom in on the rock he has, I believe. There's a crater in the distance.
Go up topside here and photo the other side of it.
The camera is being remote, operated by remote control from the earth, just a few degrees at a time.
Okay.
Now, they just about found it.
I think to not disturb things too much, let's try to fill it first. I'll get you a bag.
That's Dave Scott.
And then we'll corner the rock.
Beautiful. The television is now zeroed in on this large rock.
I'm stepping on a piece of glass right by the tongs. I'll remember that. Touch your boot.
That's a big one. That's
it is.
A big rock.
It's a big angular rock sitting up all by itself.
Okay, 180.
Roger.
For the fillet material. I'll get the fillet right here.
The fillet is the...
Before you poke a picture at it.
Fine-grained sand at the base of the rock that he's sampling now.
A piece of glass in there in some places. Oh, I'm sorry, Jim.
See some shiny.
Got it. You know, when you lean over downhill, what happens?
I gather Dave's just gone
get
down and back up.
Yeah, get some more.
Apparently Dave fell over and popped back up. They're getting some of this loose material at the bottom of that rock. They can see a considerable amount of glass in it, which means there's been heat in the past.
Now let's get some typical soil. Couple feet away, okay?
There's a crater about 2 meters
wide.
You know
what we're going to do when we get through this thing, Joe? We're going to roll it over and we're going to sample the soil beneath.
They say they're going to roll that rock over. I hope
the
television
gets
back with them.
Yeah, good idea.
The TV is panning around now.
Okay.
That a boy, Dave, that might fill a square for the football-sized rock.
It's a lot bigger than the football.
Sure would.
Might have trouble getting it through the front half.
Can't get another one.
Into the limb.
Can.
Indeed. It's about as big as a hat.
My shadow there very good, can you? Okay.
Now we're getting a view of that grill.
Okay, hang on to this one for a second. Okay, I got him. Okay. 181.
Roger, 181. And we have a view of the grill that is absolutely unearthly.
Yeah, didn't we tell you? Give me the other bag, Jim. I'll put it in. I'm glad you can enjoy it with us.
Tell
me this isn't worth doing, boy.
The sun is coming from the right,
okay,
shining down into the rill. There
the
is a very clear television
rock.
Picture here of the blocking material
hammer.
On the side of the rill.
Okay, I got it. Look at the vesicles in that rock. But those are glass bubbles, yeah. Okay. Hey, listen, I want to get a close-up of that contact. Hold on to this a second, okay? Let me get my trusty tongs. As a matter of fact, if you'll
Dave's
pull
reaching
a bag
for
out,
his
Jim, I'm going to get a
now.
Quick selected sample here, okay?
A selected sample. This is one to be very careful.
Like a little piece of glass right there.
Piece of glass right there, he says.
I can get up the hill to it.
I've got to get up the hill to it. He spotted another one.
It's a very complicated rock they have there, too. Two types of rock, also with glass coating. A breccia and a crystalline rock.
Can you put that in there?
Thought.
Trying to get one in a bag there. Can you put that in there, he says?
Oh, I'll hold the hammer.
Got a hammer. I don't believe... I wonder if that's the big
one.
That one. That's a big one. I think he found something else and he's looked at it. I don't.
No, he's still working on the big one.
Here, yeah. Grab some soil right there with the tongs. It'll stay. Seems to be fairly cohesive here.
So he is going
to.
He's going to knock a piece of it off anyway.
Even dig a trench. Yeah, my big chance.
Says he may dig a trench.
And Jim, you might want to get some material from the top and under the upslope edge of the boulder.
All right, we'll do that. We'll get it from under. Well, I'm going to roll the boulder over, and I might even roll the boulder down the rill, Joe. I got a feeling here. We ought to do that.
Oh, he's close enough to the edge of the rill, he may be able to roll the boulder down the rill.
Let me get a close-up. Hold on.
If mission control can follow it with a TV camera, we'll really see something.
I don't see any dust on it at all, Dave. Okay, looks good. The top is... yeah, I know. My top of mine's covered with dust, too. See, we'll take Gary's little formula here. See if we can't get a picture of that contact. Nice close picture for him.
Going to try to get a very close picture.
Right there. Came for a tan. Can't go on the other side.
Jim Irwin's commenting about dust, I believe, on the camera.
Doesn't that look like a contact to you, Jim? Yeah.
Yeah, in the rock itself, they're seeing a what they call a contact, which is a break point between the one type of rock and another. This big rock is a 2-for-1.
Let me take a couple of after pictures here. Before.
Oh.
You want me to hold one of those? Yeah.
So they finished their sampling now, and the after pictures they're talking about are the pictures.
You have the sample in your bag. Yeah, good idea.
To show what they sampled.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, a contact would be highly desirable then, wouldn't it?
Okay.
Yes, that would be a very particular place to show.
Mm-hmm. And after there, for the... around. Okay.
He's going to try to turn the rock over. Looking for a hammer. There's something about turn it around. There's some of his equipment.
Give me a couple of bags here. Oh, buddy.
Need a couple of bags for samples. The television camera is continuing to be panned around from Earth to different parts of the lunar landscape. We've seen several very dramatic views of the rill itself, the canyon,
hard.
Looking down into it.
Oh, is that hard?
Oh, is that hard, Dave said.
Sweet.
Trying to push the rock over. They're having a little problem. Maybe some of these rocks are deceiving.
Yeah.
It's a lot like icebergs. Yeah, like an iceberg, it goes deep, huh?
Yeah.
Dave, I think up on top here, if you hit it, it'll break. Yeah, right there, yeah. Yeah, it's coming loose.
Breaking another chunk of it off.
Yeah. There it is. I got it. Oh. That's it right there. Boy, that rock is really ready to roll. There it is. Yeah, good show.
Dave says that rock is really ready to roll.
Let's get one down here. Yeah, it is. Well, let us see the down. Oh, look at underneath the rock. We got to roll it over and get... some of that, too.
Going to roll it over. Get
underneath
some of
the rock is,
soil
looks
underneath.
Like either glass bubbles or vesicles. I can't tell which because it's in the shadow.
Either glass bubbles or vesicles. That means if there are vesicles, that means there's some volcanic material there.
Yes. Yeah. It means that it was formed close to the surface.
I get one more.
Uh-huh.
This one. Dark, black, very fine-grained basalt. By golly.
Very dark, fine-grained basalt, he says.
You got your eye on that one? Yeah. Well, are you going to pick it up or... let me get the tongs and let's get those two. I was hoping I could get a larger frag here.
That's to get the tongs to get some larger fragments. In case this communication is a little scratchy in the area of the world where you may be located.
Did you get it? Yeah.
Camera is on, back on the two astronauts working on the rock now.
Hey, where is it? Both of them, you ain't... Don't put them both in the same bag. Let's
separate the bags. Here, give me that bag. I'll fold the bag up, and you get the other. Right here. Yeah, I'll get
you. And Dave, I need a number off that bag.
For the...
Joe Allen, that's
it. It's for the rock. It's on the, or the chip off the corner uphill. I hope that makes some sense to you, but when you get the pictures back, and it's the one, it doesn't appear to have any Dinos in it. Just looked like a fine grain basalt, not vesicular. Now the other one, Jim, are you getting it? Here, let me hold the bag for you.
He mentioned Phenocrest.
Phenocrest,
sir.
There beside it. You didn't knock that off, did you? The dumbbell frag beside it? Yeah, hold the bag here. I'll see what I mean.
Looks like it really knocked a good chunk off of this thing by now.
I think that fell off, Chip. That looks like the same kind of stuff.
This one right here.
Yeah, it fell off when I hit, I guess.
But I didn't see it fall off, though.
I didn't either, but I don't think
it looks like a different type of rock.
Sure does. Not sure it was there when we started.
Their voice is quite clear here now.
Okay, Dave and Jim, we'd like you to finish this sampling and then press on with your comprehensive sample, please.
Okay. Not the glass on it, but I can't tell the inside too well.
Yeah, the phenocrest will be the visible crystals that they can see in the rock that they were describing earlier, like they were guessing at olivine.
Mm-hmm.
Some light green crystals they thought they could see.
Mm-hmm. What number is that?
161. It could still be there, but he said it was fine grain, which means very small, so they may be too small to see with the eye.
Let me put the hammer back.
Scott's putting the hammer back on the side of Irwin's backpack.
Listen, if you want, I'll go over and get the, we're probably going to need the rake for that comprehensive. Yeah, why don't you go get the rake?
Yeah.
Let me, let's see. I want to roll the rock over.
Okay, Jim, if you walk back there, could you
I'll
see if we have a TV cable hung up on the La Crew someplace? We're having trouble commanding the direction
okay,
of the TV.
By. Yeah, you do. I think the wire from the high gain antenna has got your cable to the TV.
Yeah, I'll get it.
Scott says he's going to try to roll the rock over. He still wants to do that before he moves on.
Roger, could you give that unmanned vehicle a little help, please?
Okay.
On our TV picture, Scott looks like he's looking the situation over there with that rock. He apparently has determined how deeply embedded it must be by now.
Maybe that went by you. I heard Joe Allen giving a little plug for manned flight. He was asking Jim if he would help out the unmanned vehicle, namely the remote control television on the rover that's hung up.
There are times when the man has to be there, right? Absolutely. Here we go.
Get it there.
Dave's turning
it.
There it goes. He's turning it over.
Sure is. The top layer is a bridge. You can see it.
And about that time, the TV panned away from it. We lost it.
There. Maybe it's over.
I can bet I can hear some hollers in Mission Control telling Ed Sandell to get the TV back on the rock and Dave.
You want me to bring the other tongs? No, I can get them.
Well, he turned it over. Now it's a different view of the rock. It certainly appears to be different.
Let me jump with the scoop. Yeah.
Let's explain, Fred, why it's important to go under the rock. There apparently is soil, lunar soil, which has been undisturbed for these 3.5 billion years under the rock, which has not been bombarded by particles or...
It's of interest for the people that look at the amount of radioactivity in the rock, which represents an exposure age relation to how long it's been sitting on the lunar surface.
Mm-hmm.
It's also of interest.
Dave, we're getting a local vertical off the Nomon now.
It's also of interest to sample a fine grain around a rock because we really don't understand the mechanism that forms these fillets or the way the sand piles up on some sides of rocks and not at all on others. We really don't understand that.
There's no wind there blowing, obviously.
That's right.
So what does cause the sand to pile up? Yes. Okay, let's see what they do with it.
Jim, get a scoop of that underneath. Let me go around the other side. Get a picture. The underneath portion there.
Yeah. Okay.
Jim's going to scoop up some of that soil from underneath the rock, now that it's been moved, where the rock was. Also getting pictures, very careful pictorial documentation of this.
Okay, I got the pictures.
He's talking about rolling it down the rill. That means he would roll it to the right if he actually does that. It's hard to see where there's enough slope here to do that from our TV view.
You're looking straight west. It's not too obvious that the rill is that close. The picture we saw was looking north and south into the rill.
Mm-hmm. These two astronauts are working quite efficiently and apparently comfortably there, kicking up a lot of dust.
Meantime, I'm going to configure here for a comprehensive. Yeah.
Now, when you do a comprehensive sampling, then there's a lot more detail and a lot more of routine to carry out.
Well, that term describes where they'll lay out an area that hopefully has a lot of these little chip-sized rocks, and they'll use the rake and virtually clean off or rake the entire area they've marked off and collect all of the chip-sized rocks that are available within the 1 meter or so square they'll sample.
And